My name is Rex, and if you listen to the following diabolical podcast, you will hear spoilers for Napoleon Dynamite.
This is Diabolical, the comedy podcast where four long-suffering friends dissect film's most dastardly schemes, then try to improve them. I'm your host, Ben, and this week we're diving into the awkward world of Napoleon Dynamite. So slip on some moon boots, feed your llama, and let's get diabolical. Hello and welcome. As usual, I'm here with the most glamorous group of nerds this side of the dance floor, otherwise known as the Panel of Peril. Introduce yourselves and share with us your most memorable high school moment. Craig, please kick us off.
Hi, Peril Pals, Craig here. And we were drama kids and we put on a show that we called Shakespeare in Loughborough. I played Shakespeare and I did the old Morecambe and Wise gag with the skull from Hamlet. And we got in a bit of trouble for ending it with the phrase, let's go to the casting couch, which we said in front of quite a lot of young children and their parents.
Didn't the best drop his pants as well?
Yes, he may have.
Well, there's no point me giving you my favourite high school moment now. I'll just say
Oh, no! Oh, you ruined it. I'm glad that was on your list because it's on my list too.
It was great, the anticipation of it. I went out onto the stage holding this styrofoam skull and waited because there was like a murmur in the audience. And I wanted them to think that I was about to deliver an earnest soliloquy. So I just waited until there was a proper hush and then went, how are you finding it so far? Rubbish! And then threw the skull away.
All right, the best. Take us through your favourite high school moment and pretend I never said anything before.
the best here, and my most memorable high school moment took place during that same high school performance whereby me and someone else, might very well have been Craig, were sat in the crowd for the end of the play or the short scene that we performed. And it ended with us walking onto the stage. And I think I told two or three people beforehand that I was just going to let my trousers fall down because they were quite baggy at that point. And I did. And my trousers fell down and I waddled across the stage with my trousers around my ankles. And apparently our drama teacher was furious and was looking for me. So I just hid for the rest of the night so that he couldn't find me.
He was furious. I remember him coming and asking for you.
Yeah, he didn't like improv, did he?
While you're on the mic there, Adam, what was your favourite high school moment?
Yes, it is I, Adam. I guess the biggest is the riot, of course, that everybody who was there on the day remembers it. So
yeah,
that was pretty. Yeah, it's pretty memorable. And then a few years later, it was the ROA night that got abandoned because of certain somebody was in the audience for that, and then that, it just went to pieces, didn't it? So
yeah,
it was like the legacy of all that. Just, you know, it's brilliant. In a way,
to provide a bit of context to the Peril Pals listening, that the school riot was over someone getting suspended for a haircut, and it did wind up on the national Welsh news that this had happened. Yeah.
And cost our head teacher at the time his job.
Yeah.
Well,
rightly so. He did whack a camera person with his megaphone.
With a megaphone. Yeah. Like fucking Jimmy Hart.
Yeah. And just set all the kids off running around the town with their ties around their head.
And we caught up with that headmaster several years later when he became the publican of one of our local drinking pubs. I guess he's publican of a pub. Yeah, he's a publican of a pub.
Publican of a drinking establishment. A watering hole.
A shopkeeper of a shop.
You don't want to say drinking establishment. I'll sound like a cunt.
Well, those are all great memories, and I had, in fact, all of them on my list. But I do have one more. And it was the time we were playing interform football, and there was quite a big crowd on the banks and at the side of the field watching us. And I don't know if you remember, but my form was quite strong because we had Bobby, who was just an excellent player. We were always in contention for the cup whenever we did the interform soccer competition. Anyway.
Soccer.
Sorry, football. I was 1-1 with a goalkeeper, slotted it past the goalkeeper with ease, ran off celebrating, and then just heard like laughter rise up from the side of the pitch. And it was like roaring laughter. And I didn't know what was going on. I turned around confused. And the ball had just stopped in the mud in the goal mouth.
Yeah.
Oh, I was gutted.
I think I remember that now you said about it.
Are you even allowed to have sex with the goalkeeper during the match? I wouldn't have thought you were.
Oh.
Well, that's why they call it interform football. It's
Oh, right.
You put a couple of stretches around you, you should be all right.
Napoleon Dynamite, directed by Jared Hess and released in 2004, became an instant cult classic with its unique brand of humour, unforgettable characters and ever-quotable lines. It tells the story of Napoleon Dynamite, an awkward teenager with a bizarre family, who helps his new friend win the class presidency at their small Idaho high school. Shot for only $400,000, the film punched well above its weight, going on to earn $46 million at the box office and catapult Hess and breakout star John Heder into the big time. Having just celebrated its 20th anniversary, Napoleon Dynamite remains a masterclass in sincere storytelling and embracing your weirdness. And it's one of my favourite films of all time. But what did the panel think? The best, the best, the best. Did watching this film make you feel lucky? Or do you wish you had built a cake instead?
Yeah, I'd say lucky. I watched it when the ladies were out of the house. I watched it with Dylan for the first time in a while, my son. And he laughed a lot, pretty much constantly, Dylan.
Was it his first watch?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so happy with that.
Yeah, well, as soon as I said we were doing Napoleon Dynamite next, I always tell him just in case he wants to watch. Straight away, he said, I want to watch it. So obviously it has some sort of renown among his generation, and he laughed constantly throughout. I'm assuming the dance would be the most famous thing that perhaps they've seen on social media or something like that. But yeah, he loved it, and so did I. It's held up really, really well, the humour. It's quite bitty as far as the plot goes. It's kind of a series of sketches, but that's not to its detriment. It's just a thing that you notice when watching for a podcast such as this. Great performances from everybody. John Heder is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
To the point that I guess he's never really escaped the shadow of this character, unfortunately.
True.
Yeah.
But there you go. It's an iconic character that you can hang your hat on, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of fun. I'm still, like we mentioned when we did Gentleman Broncos quite a while ago, season two, was it? Or three? Season three. I'm really curious as to how Jared Hess, the director, is going to make this Minecraft film. I can't see, because he has a very specific sort of world-building style where everybody is incredibly odd. So I'm genuinely looking forward to this Minecraft film that he's making with Jason Momoa, based on having watched Napoleon Dynamite and Gentleman Broncos recently. Going to have to watch Nacho Libre soon as well, I would imagine.
I recommend Don Verdean as well. It's a bit of an odd one.
I've not even heard of that.
Sam Rockwell.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have a look for that.
As like an archaeologist. It's quite interesting, yeah.
No, I'll have a look for that. I'd say he's probably an acquired taste, Jared Hess.
Yeah.
And his writing and direction. But I think it's safe to say that I've acquired it. And yeah, I enjoyed this reviewing of Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. And I didn't know about the Minecraft movie, so I'm looking forward to that too.
Yeah.
I imagine the opening credits will just be blocks of different resources sliding in front of the camera.
Yeah.
All right, Craig, what did you think?
Pretty similar. I think the potency of some of the gags is lost with familiarity. I think the first time you watch this, it's such a shock that every gag kind of cripples you. I still found everything funny on the rewatch. And it's not the first time I've rewatched it. I must have rewatched it, you know, a dozen times. But when you know what's coming, it's maybe doesn't catch you quite as off guard and tickle you as much as it does the first time you see it. But I think it's such a success as a piece of filmmaking. Obviously, you say it's about the awkward teenage years, and I think there's something about Jared Hess's writing and direction that's very awkward. He kind of lives in these too close close-ups and this kind of awkward blocking and body language. For example, the dance with Deb, where Napoleon's just not even looking at her. He's kind of looking up at the ceiling somewhere.
Yeah.
And he looks back at her for a minute and then he looks off somewhere else. Just little touches like that. And, you know, how awkwardly people stand too close to each other and things like that. And it's got some great physical comedy in it. Crazy good cast. And I had a lot of fun with it.
That's great. Yeah, it's a huge favourite in our house. To the extent that when Senna, my elder daughter, graduated elementary school, I got her a message from John Heder as Napoleon Dynamite, and it's one of her prized possessions.
But he does really well in Blades of Glory, playing a pretty different
he
type.
Does. Yeah, it's really good.
Isn't he quite a cocky douchebag in that?
Yeah. And
it's a really funny film, actually.
It's really like good,
He also appeared recently in the latest Tremors movie. It's called Shrieker Island.
That sounds like a good fit for him.
Right, Adam, what did you think?
No, I hadn't seen this film. I've probably seen it once before. I couldn't remember what my thoughts were entirely, but I was like, I'm probably not going to like it. I just thought, let's get it over and done with. But I ended up really enjoying it.
Oh, great.
I knew all the main bits coming through. I remember Pedro and the dance and things like that. But then there was bits in it, you know, that I was laughing out loud and I wasn't expecting it. It encapsulates, I think, that genuine awkwardness of high school for some of us, particularly probably because Napoleon, I think, is autistic. He's on the spectrum somewhere. So, you know, it's difficult for people like to fit in, especially when he doesn't feel like he wants to fit in as well. He puts himself on the outside of this circle of accepted normality, doesn't he? So,
yeah.
So it's more difficult for him, but I think that resonates with a lot of people. It certainly resonates with me and how he try and fit in sometimes at high school. But there was loads of stuff to laugh about. Yeah, I just really enjoyed this watch, and hopefully I can tempt my boys into watching it at some point as well.
Yeah, it's funny because obviously the characters are kind of quite extreme, the caricaturish, and the scenarios are a bit as well, but all of it also feels really relatable.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it was shot in Jared Hess's hometown of Preston, Idaho, and it was, you know, as I mentioned, that it was a shoestring budget. So a lot of the people in it were his friends.
Mm.
The townspeople, they would house and feed the crew. It was really a kind of a local production.
All the eggs they could eat and a big, nice big glass of egg juice.
Oh, God. The heat as well. Oh, God.
And the flies.
Yeah. And it was, you know, it was shot in sort of 3 weeks.
That's crazy.
With the whole town chipping in to get it done.
Mm.
And apparently it was really hot.
Could imagine doing that in Colwyn Bay, could you?
It wouldn't be hot for a start. I feel like the coda feels like it's genuinely a few months later. Was that shot separately?
Do you know, I'm not sure.
I feel like everyone's got longer hair. And
it does feel like that, doesn't it? Yeah. But one of the best codas of all time.
Yeah.
In my eyes.
Did you wait for it, Adam, or did you forget that there was one?
What?
There's a post-credits scene. Did you stick around for it?
No, didn't know.
Oh, no.
You're in for a treat. Go back and watch it.
I can't. I rented it on Amazon. I did because I couldn't get it anywhere else. So
you'll probably find it on YouTube. Just that scene.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be on YouTube.
I'll have a look.
The best, the best, the best. You're very quiet. Did you watch it?
No.
Good. 50-50 split.
I don't know if I've ever seen it.
Oh, really?
Oh my goodness.
Oh my god.
I don't know.
Well, I was going to sing the song from it at the end, but now I feel like I can't.
Yeah, you can't. Maybe we'll let them two go and you can sing it. And then
yeah. I'll do it separately on my own, and then you will do it separately, and I'll paste it all together.
All right, well, before I ask you for your highlights and favourite lines, we're going to play a little quiz I'm calling Napoleon Jeopardy. I have several categories for you containing questions related to this week's movie. You'll each get a chance to pick a category and answer a question thereon. The categories are: I wouldn't get out of bed, who, big budget flop, and of course, perennial favourite, All Play. Adam, would you pick a category?
I wouldn't get out of bed.
All right. So after the film was picked up by Fox Searchlight for $4 million following a bidding war between studios that was sparked by a successful screening at Sundance, John Heder negotiated a portion of the profits. But how much was his original salary?
$10,000?
It's a good guess. But it was $1,000.
Jeez. Okay.
As I mentioned, Jared Hess brought in friends from wherever he could to help make this movie. And Heder and Hess were friends at film school.
Mm.
Just want to shout out Fox Searchlight movie. One of my faves.
You know it's going to be good, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
It's not going to be full of studio meddling.
When I saw that Poor Things was on Disney Plus, I just popped it on to make it come up in my, you know, recent history so that I would remember next time I log in to watch it. And I said to Emma, oh, Fox Searchlight, I don't. And she's like, what? Just like the one with the searchlight? So I was like, no, that's the normal Fox one. This one's got Hollywood Hills in the background.
No,
it's great.
Stupid woman.
I bet Emma loves living with you, doesn't she?
She genuinely does. It's a laugh a minute.
All right, well, you're on the mic, Craig. Pick a category.
Was it big budget flop?
It was. So Tina Majorino, who played Deb, appeared a decade earlier as a child in which big budget flop?
Oh, I used to know this because she was in Veronica Mars.
It's one of the big ones. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
It's Waterworld.
It is indeed Waterworld. Yeah, she was known as a dramatic actor, and this was one of the first comedy scripts she was offered, and so she was delighted to take
She's very funny in Waterworld. Waterworld is very funny, and it's also genuinely, honestly, really good to watch it. I avoided it like the plague for literal decades, and I watched it last year, and I was like, you know, Jim Carrey and Cable Guy. It was great.
That awful script from Cable Guy.
Yeah.
I remember seeing it in Llandudno Cinema. I think that's the only time I've watched it.
Yeah, I'll never watch it.
I just thought it would be right up your alley. Pirates and...
All right, well, the best, the best, the best. That leaves you with who?
It does.
The film started out as a class project titled Palooka that featured Heder as a proto-Napoleon. But what was his character's name?
Jim. Jim Palooka.
That's a blooming good guess, but unfortunately it was Seth.
Damn.
The short, which features Seth and several familiar locations across Preston, Idaho, was later expanded into what would become the hit film. And on the strength of that short, Hess was persuaded by a producer that saw it at a small festival. He was persuaded to drop out of film school to shoot the movie, which he did. Yeah.
Good call. I feel like that was on the DVD. I feel like I have seen it.
Yeah, Palooka is, usually with the extras. All right, now for the all play.
Ooh.
How old was Pedro actor Efren Ramirez when they shot the movie?
Ooh.
19.
We've got 19 there for the best of best of best. 22.
I'm going to say 16.
16. Adam?
18.
18. They're all good guesses, but he was 31 years old.
Ah, it could have gone either way, couldn't it? Either very young or very old.
Or very middle.
Heder was 26 and Hess was only 24 when he directed that. All right, well, let's move on now to our favourite moments. Craig, could you kick us off?
Yeah, well, I'm going to be stepping on some toes, I'm sure, but my favourite moment remains and has always been the moment when Uncle Rico shows off his football skills by nailing Napoleon in the face with a steak as he cycles back to the house. It's so cruel and brilliant. It's like a bit of Jackass.
That's so good.
But if we come back, there are others, but there's one thing I love that is kind of a recurring motif throughout the whole thing that I would have said. There's not a moment though, so it was kind of
maybe we'll come back to you. The best, the best, the best. What was your highlight?
Well, in films, if your lead characters are on a bicycle, I'm usually happy. And so the sequences of Napoleon Napoleon and Pedro doing tiny, tiny jumps off their little ramp is one of my favourites. With Napoleon yeah. being like, whoa, you got like 3 feet of air there.
And yeah, he's and literally... the genuine awe on his face as he goes past.
Yeah,
it's brilliant. And it's so, I've definitely done something like that.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Well, we
build a tiny ramp.
Yeah.
That's why it's just, it's so relatable. It's amazing.
It took me back.
What was your favourite moment, Adam?
Well, I'm glad the other two picked my two backups, because my favourite was the dance. Because I think some people would find it funny, but it's more like it's the moment that Napoleon becomes cool, but he does it on his own terms.
Yeah.
And I just love it. It gives me goosebumps just talking about it now. It's just exhilarating, isn't it? You see him do it and you're thinking, this could go one or two ways, and he wins him over. But he doesn't give a fuck either, so it's great. Right. I love it.
Yeah, it's great. And that was shot with the last roll of film.
Yeah.
They knew that Hedda liked to dance. So they just put him on stage and said, we've got this last roll of film. Go for it.
Yeah.
And so most of it was improvised.
It's absolutely superb. You can tell he's got some rhythm. Because he's all over it, isn't he? And even when it stops, he's still going, and it's like...
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
There are so many moments for me that it's very, very hard to pick. I love the conversation between Uncle Rico and Kip in the donut store. Just how ridiculous they are. I love when Kip's sitting on the computer in the chat room, and you can just hear him muttering under his breath these little poems. The trip down to... Rex Kwando to learn self-defense because Kip wants to become a cage fighter. So many moments. We'll come back to you, Craig. You said you had another favorite theme or a...
Yeah, like a recurring thing which culminates in the dance, and it's the guy with the blonde crew cut who just has these incredible facial expressions all the way through. Like,
yeah.
It's almost like his face is saying whatever to every scene that he witnesses, and it continues into that dance where obviously everybody around him bursts into applause and kind of ruins his vibe. Another favourite of mine is the way Napoleon escapes over the fence like a wounded gazelle. His all limbs, isn't he? He just flops about to the floor.
He just literally lands straight onto his chest, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, there's no stunt crew there.
No.
He took a hit. Why don't we move on to favourite lines? Adam, if you'd be so kind to start us off.
Well, it's another moment that represents the heart of the movie, but could be taken as a light-hearted sort of jokey comment as well. It's Napoleon says, Pedro, just listen to your heart. That's what I do.
Mm. Yeah, but the line that immediately follows that is also excellent. I'll just tell them I have nothing to say.
That's it, yeah. But then he goes out and does say stuff.
Yeah.
All right, the best. What was your favourite line?
It's quite early on in the film when Napoleon is trying to finish school early for the day, and he's on the phone, and he's unsuccessful, but then his next gambit is, will you do me a favour? Bring me my chapstick. My lips hurt real bad.
No, Napoleon, but my lips hurt real bad. Craig.
Yeah, again, there's tons of great ones I could have picked, but my very favourite has always been, I like your sleeves, they're real big.
And he puffs them up with his palms.
Well, as I mentioned, a lot of this was autobiographical, and it was written by Jared and Jerusha Hess.
Mm.
And that was something that someone actually said to Jerusha Hess in her high school. Apparently her mum made the dress for her with big sleeves, and that was a comment she received. Oh, sleeves, they're real big. So many great lines. But where Napoleon and Pedro are talking about who they're going to ask to a dance, Napoleon says, Summer Wheatley? How the heck are you going to do that? And Pedro simply answers, build her a cake or something.
Build. Yeah. I really love... a couple of Kip ones, one being when Deb says of Rico's photo that he's looking really good, and Kip says, you can say that again. And another one when he's with LaFonda and he's got his new look, he just blinks a couple of times and says, "Peace out."
Kip's great.
Shout out for Diedrich Bader, who would go on to play Batman in Batman Brave and the Bold, and he was in Office Space as Rex Kondo. And my favourite thing that he says, after he describes the skills that people will acquire of animals, the final one is, "In the wisdom of a man."
He's got a woman in a headlock.
but he also says about his pants as well, doesn't he? He says, "He didn't get me. He wants a roundhouse kick to the face wearing these bad boys."
He's great. And he said that two of the best scripts he's ever read are Office Space and Napoleon Dynamite. And he was a really big fan of the film.
Yeah. Also, it's a shame she doesn't get much to do in it, but the grandma, she went on to play, I think, Ray Donovan's aunt in the TV series Ray Donovan.
She's also Mac's mum in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Ah, yeah.
Mm. But yeah, she's great. Knock it off, Napoleon. Make yourself a dang kissadilla. Well, a few little tidbits you might be interested to hear. Apparently, Jason Lee was offered the chance to play Uncle Rico. Yeah, but he declined, and fortunately, it went to John Grease, who is absolutely
he's great,
brilliant.
I think there's something very funny about how obvious his wig is.
Yeah, it just it ties in with the whole looking back.
Yeah.
Do you know who it reminds me of? Anthony Kiedis.
I can see that.
Yeah, just the last one, the opening titles, which are quite distinctive.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were added after the film because apparently in a test screening, the audience were quite confused because it just opened with Napoleon standing in front of his house waiting for the bus, and they were thrown in,
and
it felt a little bit disorienting. And they shot it once with John Heder's hands, but the studio wanted a hand model. And so in there you see John Heder's hand and a hand model's hand alternating. Napoleon Dynamite features several antagonists, including Pedro's presidential opponent Summer Wheatley and school bully Brandy. But we've chosen to focus on Uncle Rico, whose ill-advised methods of making sweet moolah interfere with Napoleon's life and result in a beating from Rex. The best, the best, the best. What did you think of Uncle Rico's plan?
It's quite sort of loose, isn't it? He feels like a bit of a mooch to me, just going around trying his luck. Bit of a chancer.
Yeah.
He's got no contingencies for when his plan is obviously going to fail. And I dare say that he's going to fail and just keep on trying the same thing over and over again until we get to our plans, of course. In which case, we're going to knock him up a notch. Bam.
If you had to give him a steak rating, what would you give him?
I'd give him tripe. He's not fucking a butcher's cut. He's not T-bone, sirloin, rump. He's none of them. He's tripe.
All right, well, thank you very much. Oh. Craig?
It wouldn't be that harsh. I think his little gambit of including the model ship as a incentive to buy the Tupperware is quite a smart one. Kind of distracts from how shit the Tupperware is. Also, getting the husband to cuckold himself in front of his wife by trying to tear the Tupperware, as if anyone could do that with any piece of plastic, is really funny. So I think he does quite well there. I think the big mistakes that he makes are because he's such a loser and he has no real self-esteem, he doesn't recognize self-esteem in others. Like Deb, when he tries to sell her on the breast enhancer, he doesn't realize that she thinks too much of herself. And it's the same with Rex when he shows up and hands his ass to him. You know, people aren't feeling sorry for him when he goes home with Starla, you know.
Yep. So what would you give it in steak terms? Just make it simple for the Peril Pals at home.
In steak terms, I'd say a huge can of stag chili with lots of little bits of steak in it.
Well, that's going to be nice and easy for the Peril Pals to understand. Good, thank you. Now, Adam, what are your thoughts on Uncle Rico's plan?
I've got quite a bit of sympathy for Rico because I think he's a bit down on his luck and he's trying to bounce back, but he's doing what those people do sometimes, which is he takes out his frustrations on the people around him.
Right.
But I think it's ultimately he's trying to make a better life for himself, but then he's blinkered, isn't he? And just rides roughshod over everyone. He can tell he throws himself into his schemes as well, but when they don't make out very well, he loses his heart quite quickly, doesn't he? So he's just searching, but then obviously he comes good at the end. So he was on the right road. He just needs to... Well, it would have been interesting to see where it went after the film finished and where he goes.
Well, maybe my plan would tell you.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to that in steak terms?
Well, I wouldn't be going anywhere near steak. Thank you very much.
What if I was steak?
Nut roast or whatever you eat?
I would say I'd give him one large lion's mane mushroom steak, which you can do. You can compact the lion's mane mushroom so it's... squash it down into a fry pan and make it look like a steak. It's very nice.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And to go along with that steak and chili and also tripe and chili and mushroom steak, I'm giving him 3 florets.
Of steak.
Of broccoli. Of broccoli steak. Yeah, I agree. I think he does all right with the Tupperware plan, and perhaps if he'd stuck with that or gone for a similar product, he might have had more success, but it was a poor product choice, I think. Before we unleash our best moves and wrap up this Top Fuel adventure, we've got a small favour to ask. If you think we're pretty much the best thing since Pedro's campaign promises, hop on your favourite podcast app and give us a flippin' sweet 5-star review. Your support helps us prove that we have great podcasting skills. Well, what the heck would you do? Now it's time for the real quiz, where we compete to see who can come up with the best alternative scheme to earn precious peril points for the Diabolical leaderboard. Uncle Rico wants to get rich quick, but using dubious methods to sell herbal enhancers results in a sound beating from a self-defense instructor. Adam, how would you make sweet moolah with Uncle Rico?
Many get-rich-quick schemes are much maligned or simply not understood very well. Hence, while reading something this week, I developed a rather sharp-sounding and complex scheme for Uncle Rico to try his hand at. The quantum entanglement scheme relies on the allure of quantum entanglement to promise participants exponential financial returns. It might be structured as follows. Harnessing the very essence of the universe, participants, are called castronauts, are encouraged to recruit others into the scheme by purchasing a quantum position at a certain position on the quantimimid. Front of the queue, back of the queue, a quantuminium, or a big queue. Sold as the very latest in smart investing at the pinnacle of capital futures. Each participant's financial success is intricately tied to the quantum entanglement of their position with the others in a quantumid. The higher the investment, the greater the promised quantum entanglement and potential financial gains, or quantumanium, as it's known in the biz. To add a layer of pseudoscience, castronauts are provided with quantum devices or tokens claiming to enhance their entanglement and financial success. These could be prisms stolen from the science block, a plasma ball to every customer that signs up, because everybody loves plasma balls and they look futuristic, or portable chopsticks. Finally, chopsticks you can take anywhere. Suckers are lured with the promise of unprecedented wealth, playing on the mystique and misunderstood nature of quantum physics, and come with many slogans to confuse or excite people. Such as, linked beyond space, quantum dreams take place. And entangle your fate, quantum brilliance awaits. Quantum threads weaving tomorrow's success today. Rico would obviously target old people who don't have relatives living nearby, all the while telling them This is not a pyramid scheme. Have no point have I mentioned a pyramid, Egypt, or even PG tips. And I do have some other slogans, but you know, I can shout them at you now as well if you want. What you wanted to say?
I will shout slogans at you.
So, in a nutshell, you want to confuse old people and take
confuse,
their money?
Confuse, basically. It's proven track record of people up and down.
That makes sense.
Where does Rico learn about quantum entanglement?
I just see an advert in the one of his jazz mags or something like that, you know.
One of his jazz mags.
Yeah.
Oh, so he's not the originator of the pyramid, quantumid scheme.
It'll be like somebody like L. Ron Hubbard has put it in
I think I found the flaw with this immediately then, which is that unless you're at the top of a pyramid scheme, quantumid scheme, whatever level
there's no top.
It's not a pyramid. It's entanglement.
Clearly.
There's no sides to it. There is no sides.
Yeah.
But
the way that these things work is the people who instigate them make the money, and the people who join become entangled later, they don't really make any money, do they?
No, but that's the whole thing is it's a con. Yeah.
Yeah, but Rico himself is being conned, is what I'm saying.
But he's going to make the money though off these other people.
But he has to kick some of that back up, doesn't he? Up the quantum. That's how these entanglement schemes work.
I'm just making this up as I go.
Oh, okay.
he might not even have to give it. He just gets the inspiration from what he sees, and then
So he gets all his own equipment, all the prisms and chopsticks and stuff.
Yeah, I looked at how much a plasma ball costs now, and you can get one on Temu for about £6. So,
all right. You know. So how much is he getting off the old people?
As much, you know, it was like, say, the higher the investment, the more likely you are to return some your astronaut cash.
Right.
I thought you were going to say the higher the mattress, the more money they've got.
Yeah.
The thing that I really liked was finally some portable chopsticks I've had to adopt the practice of constantly taking my own knife and fork to work because
the canteen
is so disgusting and filthy where I currently work. So I take my own knife and fork in a little bag in my inside coat pocket,
like Mr. Bean.
So the idea of portable chopsticks is very appealing to me.
They're an actual product as well. They're an actual product.
Really?
Until now.
Have a look.
Send me that link. We'll put it in the show notes.
Okay.
Until now, chopsticks have always been chained to a bank clerk's desk.
They're so cumbersome. Those cumbersome chopsticks.
It's the old saying, isn't it? That when you're derogatory towards your other half, you say the old chopsticks indoors.
All right. Well, if there are no further questions for Adam, Craig, how would you make sweet moolah with Uncle Rico?
Girls only want boyfriends who have great skills. Rex Kwando proves that when a man possessed of great skills becomes a teacher, he can not only make a living, but also live the dream. Uncle Rico has a great skill. Football throwing skill. Practicing his throwing arm daily has clearly paid off, as he is able to nail Napoleon, a target moving at speed, with a stake. To get rich quick, Uncle Rico will become a combat football coach and teach dweebs how to nail their bullies with footballs, stakes, yellow snowballs, ninja throwing stars, eggs, cow pats, batarangs, paperweights, pork chops, rope darts, doorstops, stale bread, a cell phone, a delicious heavy bass, an N64 controller, a glass ashtray, a piggy bank, a bike lock, a bowl of tapioca pudding, a bike helmet, a toaster, a small dog bred for its bite strength, or anything that comes to hand. Nothing is off limits in the name of self-defense at Uncle Rico's combat football school, and it's not long before all of the many dweebs at Napoleon's school are signing up for classes.
It's like the generation game, that, wasn't it? Surprised there wasn't a cuddly toy.
Well, how many can you remember?
Oh, a small dog bred for its biting
glass
power.
Glass ashtray.
Yeah.
Pork chop.
Yeah.
A delicious heavy bass.
Yeah.
Why'd you get nailed with a heavy bass?
Yeah. That actually links to my question. Obviously, we know in high school, particularly in the United States, there is a certain hierarchy. You got your jocks, you got your nerds. What do nerds typically lack that jocks possess?
Strength.
Right. Or at least a kind of sporting prowess.
Yeah, but that's why they go to Uncle Rico's combat football coaching school. They don't arrive with this skill. They acquire it.
So you posit that this is possible for anyone to acquire?
Yeah, give me a big enough fulcrum and I can move the earth. These kids are taught technique. You know, you can pitch a football or, and this is the important thing, a heavy bass wasn't the only thing they're being taught to throw here. What they're being taught to throw is anything that comes to hand. So around the schoolyard, that could be a rock, a squirrel, a pencil, and a razor, a pencil sharpener, a calculator.
Napoleon nails Rico, doesn't he, on his
he
van
does.
With an
with
orange,
like an orange,
doesn't he? Yeah, without any skills.
And Napoleon's a dweeb. But he's obviously got some of Uncle Rico's genetics in there. And, you know, he's been watching him practice and doing the videos and stuff. So he's picked up by osmosis some of that Uncle Rico combat football coaching technique.
That's a very good point you've made there. I'm genuinely convinced.
How much is he charging these kids?
How much is he charging the kids?
Yeah.
However much he feels is substantive to the lifestyle he wants. But I don't know what his dreams of richness are. He lives in a caravan in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Yeah.
Getting rich quick to him might just be enough money to live in a caravan for a year.
$300 for Rex's course was too much, though, wasn't it? So he's got to charge.
Well, Kip did pay it,
though,
didn't he? But he felt it was a lot, yeah.
He didn't know they quit, didn't they? They didn't bother doing it. That's
Kip,
a rip-off.
Kip paid it? Left. I don't think so.
Didn't know.
He says on the way home from it.
That was a rip-off.
That was, yeah. Hence, he paid for it.
No, they left because they were going to pay $300 at a time. And then that was the course. They joined the course, but they didn't. They fucked off.
Well, he must have known how much it was going to be and thought about paying for it. So, yeah, let's say a bit less than that. I don't know, $250.
How many nerds?
Well, in Napoleon's school. Well, let's say in a standard school, he got, what, 1,800 pupils? Let's say roughly a third of them are nerds, dweebs.
It's a big market.
All of them going to sign up, are they?
Yeah. Why not? Why wouldn't they all sign up? You got some reason why they might not?
I think they tell their parents they might want to join this combat football coach.
And their parents would be like, oh, great. That's a load off.
Fuck off.
Well, for the peace of mind of my child not being bullied, it's
just playing Nintendo.
Just go to your room and read this article I found on quantum entanglement.
Exactly.
They don't necessarily need to get money off their parents. They're all enterprising, intelligent teenagers. Like Deb.
Yeah, Deb's got her own business.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, if there are no further questions for Craig, the best. How would you make sweet moolah with Uncle Rico?
Uncle Rico has several options open to him. Option one. He can buy lots of lottery tickets. If you buy two lines or tickets, then that instantly doubles your odds of winning. So by buying 76 or even 77 tickets, well, the odds would be incalculably in your favour, hombre. And that's how you get rich quick. Option two. He can live out his NFL dream by setting up a lemonade-style stand at the local mall where he sells photo opportunities of himself, thereby trading on his fame as the high school star quarterback of 1982 in a small Idahoan town that's guaranteed moolah, hombre. Option three, he can utilize the technology from the time machine that he purchased in order to make more time machines and then sell them for a profit. Lots of people with broken hopes and dreams will buy said time machines just as Uncle Rico has, and thus he will get rich quick, hombre. Option four, erect a tent in which to claim that Rico can predict the future and guarantee instant wealth for users. Users would then pay a small fee to enter, and then he would provide hilarious and absurd predictions, such as, you will find a suitcase full of money at the grocery store, or, invest all of your money in banana peels, a new currency of the future. Of course, the real fortune would come from the entrance fee, not the predictions. He just needs to remember to include a disclaimer in the fine print, hombre. Option 5. Invest all the money he doesn't have in a Great British ISA, just as Jeremy Hunt has advised us all to do. That's a get-rich-slow-or-not-at-all scheme, hombre. Importantly, do remember, real wealth usually comes from hard work, dedication and ethical practices. Always approach business and financial endeavours with honesty and integrity, hombre.
So which one of these 5 options does he pick?
That's up to you.
Which that's such a cop-out. Yeah. All right, I'm going to pick the lotto tickets one and say it doesn't work. There you go.
Foiled again.
Wait. What numbers does he pick?
Lucky Dip.
Definitely not going to win.
Lucky Dip's so shit, aren't they?
I think you'll find that buying 2 lotto tickets does not double your chances of winning the lotto.
It does.
From a certain point of view.
You've got one chance with 1 ticket, 2 tickets, 2 chances.
Yeah. That makes sense to me. I don't know a lot about maths. But...
Well, actually, of these, I think there is one that genuinely would work and has been proven to work historically. But should I tell you which one?
Nah.
Time machine.
Time machine.
Time machine.
You said historically.
Fortune teller.
Yeah.
You can rip people off as a fortune teller very easily.
Yeah.
My sister's paid money to a fortune teller. What a fucking moron.
I keep going back to psychics and stuff. Oh, have you ever been to psychic before? No. I'm going to go this time. Don't tell them anything about your
mum. The things they said to me were really, like, you couldn't know them. Yeah, okay. How long have you been on Facebook?
What, your mum's dead or your gran's dead and wants to talk to you. Fuck off.
I'm getting. You've lost someone close to you, haven't you?
I'm getting a very elderly lady. Very elderly lady.
I am now judge.
Getting the word John.
Oh, we don't know her. Then why do you grieve for her so? I don't. Good. Because she tells you not to grieve.
Is Uncle Rico actually selling lemonade?
No, it's a lemonade-style stand. So he's sat in front of their home with his handwritten sign with the backward R and everything saying fortune telling. What price could he be charging? Let's say $5.
$5 a pop.
Yeah. How many people live in that town? Let's say...
4.
40 million people. And let's say as a percentage, the amount of people that would want their fortune read, let's say 87%. So that's quite a lot of money coming in, really.
Yeah, that is. All right. Well, if there are no questions remaining for the best, I will bring us home. After the disheartening tussle with Rex that left Uncle Rico longing for the days when his football prowess was unmatched, he finds himself wandering the streets of Preston, Idaho, walking by teenagers clad in drab, uninspired modern attire. Uncle Rico's mind drifts back to the smooth, vibrant veneer of the 80s, a time of neon colours, bold patterns, and bodacious fashion statements. As he gazes at the dull clothing choices of the youth around him, a light bulb goes off. If he can't physically return to his glory days, maybe he can at least dress the part and get others to join him. Fueled by newfound purpose, Uncle Rico sets to work. He dusts off his old sketchpad and begins designing a fashion line that would make the 80s proud. Ideas flowing as freely as his memories of yesteryear. Knowing that every great fashion line needs a face, Uncle Rico decides that he will be the model for his own creations. He contacts Glamour Shots by Deb and arranges a photo shoot. Dressed in his own designs, Rico poses with unmatched intensity, his eyes screaming stories of past gridiron glory. Deb catches the essence of each item, from leggings that evoke memories of MTV to cassette tape earrings that dangle like disco balls from Rico's ears. With his inventory ready and the glamour shots prepared to entice, Rico transforms his trusty Dodge Santana into a mobile pop-up shop. He decks out the van with bright flashy lights and posters of his glamour shots, turning it into a beacon of 80s flair. As he drives through the streets, he blasts 80s hits from the speakers, drawing crowds eager to see what this time-travelling merchant has to offer. His sales pitch is simple yet effective. Get rich or die styling, the Uncle Rico way. And here are just a few of the items on sale. Glory Days Letterman jackets. Customizable Letterman jackets that are a tad too small. Moon Boots Redux. A line of modern moon boots designed with 80s classic style, but with a dubious promise of improved athletic performance. Fanny Pack Extravaganza. A collection of fanny packs in eye-searing neon colours and patterns. Each one coming with a hidden pocket for storing tater tots. And Rico's Rad Bandanas. A selection of bandanas that come with a guide on all the ways to wear them 80s style, around the neck, as a headband, or even as a makeshift crop top.
What kind of stock are you carrying in a van of that size?
He's got a box of bandanas, got a box of fanny packs, box of moon boots.
What are you charging for those? A pop?
Oh, well, the Letterman jackets, you're looking $30 to $40.
Yeah.
Moon boots, $20 to
$30. Yeah.
Bandanas, about $5 a pop.
Yeah. Just trying to think of if there's a famous British sitcom about guys who want to get rich quick who sell clothes out of the back of a van. No ink.
There should be.
They weren't strictly limited to fashioner, were they? Anything?
They weren't. They had even more chances to get rich quick that didn't work.
It was usually the stuff off the back of a van, though, fall off the back of a lorry or something, wasn't it?
You think if they'd concentrated on 80s day glow bandanas, they would have got rich quick?
Probably, yes, yeah.
Instead of potential explosive sex dolls.
Yeah, exactly. Or buying dodgy satellite systems.
Or a chandelier that falls off the ceiling, or a man that falls through a bar.
The best. Which of those items from Uncle Rico's pop-up shop would you buy?
Oh, bandana. Beyond any shadow of a doubt. Many's the time that I've been strutting around town in my cowboy boots and my bandana.
Brett Hitman Hart shades.
Oh, now we're talking. Yeah, big old frilly lapels.
Yeah.
And I've drawn many an admiring look, and I've simply looked the other way, smirking, and carried on about my business.
I imagine no one would try and mess with you dressed like that, very much in the way no one messes with Rex because he's got those baggy American flag pants on.
Yeah, no, nobody wants a roundhouse kick.
You don't want a roundhouse kick to the face with a cowboy boot.
Absolutely not. No, that'll leave a mark, physically and psychologically.
Those schemes were fadge-fartingly diabolical. Now it's time to vote for our favourite. As a reminder, we had Adam's Quantum Entanglement, Craig's Combat Football Gambit, the best's Get Rich Smorgasbord, and my own Rico Fashion Foray. Remember, each vote is worth exactly 1 point for the leaderboard. No more. Come on, guys. But
certainly no less.
Good. And let me remind you that you may not vote for yourself.
I do genuinely like that catchphrase. It's probably my favourite catchphrase on the show.
All right. Craig, who have you voted for?
Well, as you know, traditionally, we'll do a little bit of art when we write down the name of the person we're voting for. And this week I've done a Letterman style letter, which is a T because I've voted for Adam Turner.
You cruel bastard.
What do you mean? What? I really like the idea of just changing the name of a pyramid scheme to make it seem like something else.
Yeah, that's it.
And I also, I like
Quantum.
I'm very interested in quantum physics as well. So
it's well beyond my comprehension. Hence why I chose that particular.
But you can imagine getting quantum entangled with alternate reality versions of yourself who have more money than you, and that's why you occasionally find 10 quid down the sofa or in some pants that you didn't know they had.
I was thinking about cross-dimensional investment opportunities where you basically take money off your alternate self and things like that.
I'm sure that happens.
So I was thinking along those lines, but I thought that's going to be too difficult. I'll stick to quantum physics.
Schrodinger's wallet is when if I open my wallet, I don't know whether it's got money in it or not.
That's just life, isn't it? Right, Adam, who have you voted for?
I have voted for the scheme I thought was most in keeping with the film, and I voted for Ben.
Whee!
You're welcome.
Well, Ben, who have you voted for? Well, I voted for the plan that is probably the most tried and trusted, although not ethical, as ChatGPT might advise. It certainly is almost a guaranteed way to make money. And I voted for Adam.
Two for Adam.
Yeah, stealing money from old people is one of the oldest tricks in the book, isn't it?
Certainly is. That and marrying them.
Ooh, topical.
Yeah, Rupert Murdoch's got another one in the bag, hasn't he?
He sure has.
That leaves the best. Who have you voted for?
Well, I haven't got a humorous story about why I voted for who I voted for this week, because it's Craig. Where is it, Craig?
All right. Well, the best. Tell us, what has that done to the Diabolical leaderboard?
Well, tragedy this week, I'm afraid, which we'll get to. In the lead with 13 points is Craig.
Lucky.
In second place with 12 points is Ben.
Boo!
In third place with 10 points, it's Adam.
Yay!
Very sad. In final place with 9 points, it's myself.
Oh, there's not much in it, is there?
Boo!
Tighter than a duck's arse.
This has got to be our tightest season so far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're all bringing our A game.
Yeah.
We're all bringing our shit game, and we're just all doing it together.
Yeah. More likely.
Race to the bottom.
Run out of steam.
Well, Adam, as next week's host, we beg of thee, please give us something good to watch.
Well, you ask and I shall deliver. Next week's film features two actors that have already featured in two of the films we've done so far, which is Morgan Freeman and Richard Harris. The other two actors rounding out are Gene Hackman and Clint Eastwood. Because we're going to be watching our first Western. We're going to be watching Unforgiven.
Oh my God, our first Western. That's crazy.
Mm. Yeah, that is crazy.
And not before time.
And that's it for another episode. Thank you for listening. If you think we're as cool as a nunchuck-wielding tetherball champion, don't forget to follow us on your podcast platform of choice. And why not join your fellow Peril Pals in sharing a 5-star review? Just one review from you can make all the difference. For more shenanigans throughout the week, follow us on all the social medias at DiabolicalPod. Join us next time when we'll be dissecting Unforgiven. Until then, remember, vote for us and all your wildest dreams will come true.
You know this boogie is for real.
I got a reason to be carefree. Because I got a real big hat on me.
Yeah.
If you're lost, you can look and you will find me.
Time after time.
If you fall, I will catch you. I will be waiting. Time after time. This is Friabolical. Oh, I've messed up.
Oh, just put that in the bloopers.
Oh, made a mistake.
Toy Story style blooper. Woody's come out with another boner.
Watch this next clip where Ben from Diabolical podcast.
I saw you had a clipboard. I wondered what you were doing.
After this...
Put on the bloopers.
Welcome to Friabolical. Oh, is he done?